Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we're here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And on this time around, we go back to our roots. This guy said flywheels like, I don't know, 3-4 times on this episode, because we have on Pierre Parson, the founder of Usual Money, a new stablecoin that is the middle between Tether and Maker that catapulted to $200 million in TV in circulation and growing steadily. And he has a master plan to bring Usual to the billions. That just makes sense. It really does make sense. You can tell he's very thoughtful and intentional with the way that he designed this protocol and the mechanisms, the tokenomics of the Usual token. And he had a career as a very deep career in French politics. He was in parliament. He was an MP. He was very close to the prime minister, Emmanuel Macron. I don't know if I said his name right, but it's late here. Anyways, Kit, what did you think of this one?
I think it's going to be a nice one, man. People got to strap in and just listen.
If you like stablecoins, you'll love this episode. And without further ado, we'll get into it. But before we do, go ahead, hit that bell button if you're on YouTube. Give us a like, subscribe, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. If you're watching this on Twitter, X, whatever you call it, make sure you give this a retweet, give this a like, leave a reply. If you're on your socials, go ahead and follow it on all our socials. Twitter, TikTok, Telegram, at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter, at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. Everybody, welcome back to Flywheel. I'm your host DeFi Dave, here as always with Capital K, and this time around we get back into the world of stablecoins, and we have on the founder of Usual Money, Pierre Parson. Usual Money came in with a big splash onto the scene, garnering 200 million TVL quite quickly, and not only did it gain that much TVL, but it sustained it, and it's been a steady grind up since, and has taken its place in the realm of nine-figure circulation stablecoin. So, Pierre, thank you so much for coming on and joining us at Flywheel.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, and it was Studi that connected us, and she was actually who we had on previously not too long ago that talked about all about stablecoin go-to-markets, and I feel like you're an excellent case for that, and we're going to get into that later into the show. But to start off, I would love to hear about your background, because you had a whole career in French politics. You actually have a Wikipedia page about you, and I'm just curious, which is crazy. One of the few guests with an actual Wikipedia page. So can you tell more about your background and what was your life in French politics like? Because I know there was recently, however it worked, they dismantled the government and they picked a new prime minister. So yeah, let's
get into it.
Yeah,
sure. So I don't have this the same traditional background as many founders in crypto. I think, I have a really different one. So I'm a former lawyer. I have been also the political advisor of the French president before he was president. So, I was advising him on political relation with other partners and so on, making the strategy and other things for advising to be elected. After that, I became a MP, so congressman in France, in the National Assembly. And during 5 years, I was dedicated to a lot of things, especially to crypto regulation. So I have made the first legal framework about crypto in 2017, 2018.
Wow.
I discovered crypto, in 2013, not at the really beginning, but we were early at this stage. And, when I had the chance to be elected, I wanted to, do not let, this subject to, old people that can create, very strict and, misunderstanding in terms of regulatory framework. So I deep dive on that, and I create a framework for a lot of entrepreneurs in France and also former foreigners that can be incentivized to install their equity activities in France. I was also the vice president during of the presidential party during during 3 years, and I quit in 2022, you know, to embrace another life, because politics is cool. It's burning your life also, like being an entrepreneur. But clearly, sometimes you need to change. You need to learn new things, and maybe to come back later. But yeah, I have made the choice to not represent myself and to come back to the private sectors. Also, in order, because I really think that you know, politics is not a job or not a normal job, and so it's good to not do that a whole life.
What was it like being in French politics? Like I actually like was in politics before I was in crypto as well, and so like what's it like, you know, trying to like, yeah, what is it like, how would you describe it? Because we kind of got a glimpse of it with the whole like election recently. It's like, oh wow, like it can be pretty crazy. But like, how would you describe it to someone from the States or someone not in France?
I think it's the same job everywhere, where it's an instant job, intense job. You have a, but you do your job 24/7. There is no real holidays. Your
sounds like crypto.
yeah, absolutely. It's not really different in that in certain case. Yeah, and you know, it's. I enjoy, you know, I enjoy this part of my life because you discover a lot of things, a lot of people. You have also some responsibility because what you do is not just for yourself. You know, you do that for the. For the common good, in certain sense, you can have your view, but at the end, everyone that is in politics should act for the common good. I was in charge of various things, you know. I work on institution, how to renovate and innovate also on the field of the fact that there is less and less people that are voting. I was in charge also of structuring the party, so it was more... an engagement to win elections in certain sense. Mm-hmm. And I also have some deep subject like monetary policy, budget. I was in the financial commission. So I was a guy that was in charge of working on the budget, voting the budget. And so it's why also this has some links with crypto, because we work on a special tax law framework for crypto. So no, I enjoyed this time. Really, I had an incredible luck to be elected as the youngest man in Paris since 300 years. So I was very lucky to have this experience at my age. And it's why also I have took this decision, you know, to continue my engagement, because I really think that jumping in crypto is like a political engagement. You know, you think that the finance should be different, and so you are trying building something that is your own protocol and that will belong to others on the long run, that that will help also people, users in general, to have a better system, better financial system. So it's like an engagement of a commitment in terms of a political one.
Yeah, no, understood. It's a job like beyond yourself. It's public service for a reason. and so back to 2022, you decided to leave politics and you're like, okay, time to get back to the private sector. And you decided to start, of all things, a stablecoin. So out of everything to build in crypto, what motivated you to start a stablecoin?
I think I was at this time very naive. on the difficulty of building a stablecoin. I think really stablecoin is the most complex market in crypto. I have seen that many times because you have a lot of actors, and really it's a matter of network effect. Not just that, but you know, for entering in this competition, especially having 200 millions of TVL, it's really difficult. it's really difficult. So in 2022, when I decided to quit politics, I really want to work on stablecoin because I was convinced since 5 years that stablecoin will be one of the major innovations that will be democratized. So democratization in crypto is one point, and every time, every day for crypto entrepreneurs, we need to work also to bring crypto at a new stage for in terms of democratization. And I really think that stablecoin will be the first use case that will be really a daily use case in the global life. And I really think also that, you know, the actual infrastructure is an old infrastructure, money is an old infrastructure. And so crypto through stablecoin will be everywhere, as I think in less than 10 years, all the banks will have shift from their classical and actual infrastructure to an infrastructure that will be based on blockchain and that will use stablecoin for commercial money transaction. So I was totally convinced about the potential of stablecoin, mm-hmm. also by the fact that, you know, you need to solve this problem if you want to solve other problems on top of that in DeFi, especially the fact that there is a big concentration with some fiat-backed stablecoin in DeFi. So in certain sense, you will have never full decentralization in crypto if you have various other actors and actors that are neutral in certain sense. And so it was my point. I really think that in between crypto-backed stablecoin, fiat-backed stablecoin, so fiat-backed stablecoin were very much centralized, crypto-backed, fit well with the crypto ethos, but in between you don't have anything that corresponds mm-hmm. to something that can serve DeFi. And the other thing that I was I think a little bit ahead some VC and so on, and the interest rates were growing at this stage, and I see okay, those company, let's say Circle, Tether, will make more profit than traditional bank, will make more profit than, and this is the case, they announced it recently, but than BlackRock. So mm-hmm. you are a company of 40 employees, your name is Tether, and you are making more profit than BlackRock. So
insane.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm really glad for them, but I really think that this is because there is an inefficiency in this market. So Tether Circle bring a lot of value in the ecosystem, creating some stability and liquidity. You know, in 2017, you were trading some asset with BTC. It was not the same the same comfort in certain sense. And so
it's not the same Tether.
Yes. and so, yeah, clearly, I really want to make something that is different and serve also the community with something that is innovative, you know. In Europe, this is something that I spoke to Steve many times. In Europe, sometimes entrepreneurs just repeat something that they that is a success, you know, in US. Really, it's a problem because we are just making copy paste of various companies that are already existing in US just to make a successful company in Europe. I really don't want to make a normal, traditional and issuer of stablecoin, you know. I don't want to make a copy-paste of Circle issuing, let's say, a euro stablecoin. I really want to make another type of model. And I think we achieved to do that with Usual. And yeah, this is really the beauty of the protocol. I think there is no real competitor on what we are trying to build. Because really, in the way we distribute the value and the ownership, there is no other protocol that are doing that.
Yeah, and that leads perfectly to our next question. Like, what is Usual Money, your stablecoin? How does it work and how is it different than its contemporaries?
Yeah, in few words, we can sum up Usual as we rebuild Tether fully on-chain. So you have your collateral on-chain, we aggregate T-bills token. This is totally transparent, and we issue a stable coin that is not backed by any bank deposit. And this is very important to have a better stable coin because you have seen with USDC, especially 1 year ago when SVB bank bankrupts, mm-hmm. We were close to have a systemic risk because, you know, Circle is tied to their bank deposit. A part of their collateral are in banks. And as banks are not fully collateralized because they work on a system that is fractional reserve. You have a fractional reserve risk. That means that a part of your collateral can disappear if the bank that is holding that in their account just fail. So really trying to build a better system where your collateral is fully transparent. You don't have to have this monthly report where you are not sure that the one that is certifying this report is totally transparent. And having a stablecoin that is in between commercial money and central money is very important. Because I really think that people deserve to have a stablecoin where there is no systemic risk. And the only systemic risk we can support is if there is a fail of a state, especially United States, because it's linked to the US dollar. So at the end, I think it makes sense if our only big risk is the fact that US make default. After that, the second part of usual is not just to have a better stable coin and a stronger one, is to have something that is a model where we distribute the ownership. And really it's different because you have, let's say you have three models. You have Fiat, you have Tether Circle. Tether Circle are distributing nothing. So 100% of the revenue are going for shareholders. You have a model with yield-bearing stablecoin, Mountain Protocol, some permissionless T-bill stablecoin in certain sense that give a yield of 5%. This model are revenue share model. So that means that the company, the protocol is not making a revenue and they just distribute the revenue of the collateral, you know, to the user of and the holder of the stablecoin. That's really, I think, what should be in the long term, the liquidity and the base liquidity in crypto to be tied, you know, to the yield of something that is tangible, that is concrete, and that is T-bill or bonds behind the collateral. But the problem with those type of mechanism is that they don't give any incentive to own really the protocol. They just distribute the revenue, and so they just sacrifice future cash flow of the protocol of the company, and they distribute that to the holder. And so that means that it's very difficult to bootstrap. This is very difficult also to align the interest, because if you enter at the beginning of a company that is a yield-bearing stable coin, and you are there when the company succeeds, you have no upside. You know, you will have always your stable coin and you have your 5% yield. And so really the goal of usual is to distribute not only the revenue, but distribute something that is the governance of the protocol. So the ownership on all the infrastructure, the treasury, the future cash flows, the decision of the risk policy, and so on. So clearly we are in between maker and I think something like Tether, where we aim to decentralize a fiat-backed stablecoin, but distributing the yield or the value in general through the ownership of the company. And so if usual scales, if usual is able to take a part of the market, normally the price of the governance token also should evaluate that. And so you can incentivize people to take risk at the beginning and align their interest on the long term of the protocol. So really the real innovation of usual is a matter of tokenomics. I know that a lot of people don't love working on tokenomics, but I really think that the great innovation of crypto is about tokenomics. It's about tokenomics in a certain sense where the idea is to have a better distribution of the value. And clearly, those tokenomics nowadays are quite fucked up. There is a lot of problem of dilutions, VC dumping on retails, founders also, and so on. So really, the idea of usual was to create something that is based on game theory, where you have incentivized to build something in common. And if you play the common rules, so the rules of the protocol, normally you will be rewarded for that.
Yeah, I think it's really clever how you structure the game theory dynamics of, like, you know, USD plus plus, and then also with the usual element, and also the was it base interest rate guarantee big or, yes. or you know, yes, so like big, all yeah. of these kind of flowing together is really interesting. But before we kind of dive into that, I want to just understand, like, how does the life of a stable coin in the usual ecosystem, right? Like, I know that I have to first submit some RWA assets in order to mint, you know, the USD 0 one for one. But where do I first get these RWA assets? Do I go to Ondo first, or do I just, you know, mint my own T-bills? You know, I buy it from Treasury Direct and then I just go and mint it? Or, like, how does it work?
It's a really good question. No, it's easier than that, hopefully. So the idea is that you can mint a stablecoin bringing directly the real world asset. So you're right. So the T-bill that's eligible. So for the moment, we have Hashnode. On the long term, we will have other issuer of T-bills, maybe like Ondo, BlackRock, and so on. And the idea is that you can mint 1-1, like you said, with the T-bills token. You can mint 1-1 the stablecoin. But you have also a different way. If you are a DeFi user, you don't have the 100K for buying, let's say, a T-Bix token and so on. You can also buy on secondary market or through the primary market some USD 0 with USDC. So it's very simple. You connect to the DApp, you have USDC or T-Bix token, and you can mint 1-1 USD 0. And if you want to redeem, you just have to burn your USD 0 and obtain the underlying and redeeming with Hashnode. So for the redemption, you need to be KYC, KYB, like it is the case with USDT and USDC. You know, the primary market is built for having a layer of compliance on it. So we have the same type of mechanism. The only difference is that if you come with USDC, you are sure to have no slippage because someone else can provide for you the collateral in the protocol. So this is what we call collateral providing. And this actor will allow you to mint 1-1 a big amount of USD 0 with USDC, avoiding to have any slippage on secondary market.
Okay, so with USDC, even if you're not KYC, or like anybody can go and mint USD 0. Yes. Okay, anybody can mint USD 0, but to redeem the underlying assets, that's when you need to be KYC'd or KYB.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
Understood. And then with the usual governance token, what function does it have in the ecosystem? So it's both with, like, governance, it's with revenue sharing. Like how you framed it earlier. It's like somewhere in between Maker and Tether. It's like Maker because everything is on chain. Like, you can all the assets, like the underlying collateral, exactly, is on chain. It's not like a Circle situation where it's like SVB or something like that. It's like all on chain. So it's like Maker in that respect, but it's like more like Tether because it's just like that risk-free rate. It's that treasury rate. And it's just like, I'm surprised, like, it took this long for something like Usuals to come about. I guess it's because the underlying infrastructure didn't really exist before. I guess this was built during the bears, like, oh, like, we got to make the like this RWA is blah blah blah, yeah, T-bill token, yeah, this and that.
You're 100% right. Yeah, yeah. And clearly the difference with Maker is that we are 1-1, so we don't have a CDP mechanism, and also the distribution of the value and the ownership is clearly different. You know, they have a Sky token, and the Maker one, the former one. But clearly the how they distribute the token is not really the same way for us to be distributed.
Got it. And did you raise for this at all, or did you, like, completely bootstrap this yourself? I don't remember seeing any announcement or this kind. I first heard of Usual because, not because of a raise. I heard it because you guys did the work and got 9 figures of TVL. I'm like, where did these guys come from?
Yeah, we raise a free round, pre-seed, seed, and seed extension with various actors. Pre-seed was with angels. Seed was with institutionals like Kraken, IUSG, GSM and Stockware.
Of course, Studi did her work and got in there, of course. Not surprised.
Absolutely. She do an amazing job when you have a lot of VC that don't want to deep dive and do their homework. Suti was the one that deep dive a lot in the complexity of the model, especially in beer market, you know. And when you are in beer market, it's a tough job for VC to invest. And clearly, she do the bet and yeah, she's incredible. Really, she's very helpful for the protocol. After that, we have made a seed extension with DeFi founders, you know, some guys like Michael Egorov from Curve, Sam from Frax, Balancer from Vax, and so on. That was very important for us to have them on our cap table because really, you know, usual aim to be neutral in the DeFi ecosystem. We aim to have something that is not tied to a central entity and that can be used also by various DeFi protocol. And you were mentioning what is the value of usual token and how it is working. And this is a really good question because for neutrality, usual token will be the way to control the protocol. This will be the way to maybe make usual wars like curve wars where people will fight to bring a new collateral in behind the USD zero and reallocate a part of the collateral. So this is something that will be powerful. You will have gauge system with the usual. You will have the possibility to vote the risk policy, to vote new product, to vote what will be done with the treasury, to vote on the fees, on the whole mechanism of the structure of usual. So usual is not just, you know, I will be hard, but I think there is a lot of governance token that has no value, no real value, because at the end, the value and the revenue of the company is going in the end of the shareholders, especially VC and founders. And sometimes, even if it is the case, they issue a governance token and sell it to retails on DeFi market, on CeFi market. And really, I think what's the value of a governance token that is just governing, you know? If you govern something that on zero, that is value close to zero, I think this is really a problem of alignment and so I really think I'm quite bear on a lot of governance token that have no real values and just voting, you know. The really, really thing that is important is what revenue is generated by the protocol. And so what value is belong to the user at the end that have this governance token? What should do someone that have a governance token that can control the treasury, that can control the protocol in general? So I really want to design usual. And so it's a 2 years work with my co-founders. We want to design usual token as something that has a long-term value, not a token that will be diluted, you know, over the long run and will go to zero because it was just a use case for bootstrapping the TVL. That's very important to make a shift in terms of tokenomics on the long run.
Yeah, and speaking of bootstrapping TVL, I would like to go over that go-to-market strategy and how you pulled off going from zero to 100 really quick. And so like, what were you thinking behind, like what, yeah, walk me through like the strategy. Like you guys had like the pills program. I'm sure you guys did something else. I'll let you take it.
Yes. So we have the pills program. We start a public pre-launch with 60 or 70 millions of TVL from some of our investors, but mainly some big whales and crypto hedge funds. And after that, we scale quickly with organic growth. We are close to 15K holders in general in all the ecosystem. And really the idea for usual during the pre-launch phase was to integrate a lot of DeFi partnership. So we are on Pendle, we are on Morpho, we are on Curve. So clearly spreading the stablecoin, especially in DeFi, is very important because you need to be sure to be everywhere for having a use case. Because in usual, you mentioned that you have the stablecoin that is a means of payment, the trading counterparty, and that will be used like USDT and USDC on the long run. You have USD 0++ that is like the version of the stablecoin that is stacked and that earn yield in usual. And so you have usual that is the governance token of the protocol. And so spreading over DeFi protocol is very important. We will have some announcement before the end of the pre-launch phase, especially with cross-chain integration. That's very important for us. And mid-November, we will announce a TGE. And so TGE will be the starting point of the real life of usual. The real life of usual, because the version of the stablecoin that is stacked, USD0++, will start to yield in usual. And really, this is a real moment where the protocol will born, you know. And at this step, normally we should have some traction through the fact that we are beating the risk-free yield with our model. And also we will have the airdrop that will close the pre-launch phase. In the meantime, CeFi integration will be very key. And so listing of a stablecoin, being a collateral, is very an important point. So we are working with exchanges to have something that will be ready for the TGE to be listed and to be used as a collateral. So this is really not a traditional playbook, but we decide to start integrating DeFi, after that CeFi, bringing various features on top of a pre-launch point that is not really what we want on the long term. But it was a pre-launch phase that is dedicated to bootstrap the system and to be sure we have enough liquidity in Curve, enough liquidity in Morpho, and we are well implemented in DeFi protocol to start yielding in usual at the TGE, so in mid-November. So that's our strategy. And really, after that, we have a long-term playbook that is really different because at the end, usual is like a decentralized banking protocol. I will never say that to a regulator, but the idea is to create something that is not just a stablecoin issuer. You know, a stablecoin issuer like Tether and Circle, what they want at the end is to become a bank. They really want to have a license to issue stablecoin like a bank because they give access to fractional reserve risk. They can offer various products on top of their stablecoin and so on. Really, I see usual as a decentralized banking protocol. I really think that is the future of fintech. I really don't think that fintech will survive in the way they are built. And so we need to build a banking protocol on-chain where the first layer is to issue something that's your mean of payment, that is your stablecoin. And so it's like the deposit in a bank. And after that, you create various other products on top of these main activities. And that creates a lot of value for the protocol. So usual, the first step is building the stablecoin to be in systemic, to have enough liquidity, few billions, that will create a distribution of the stablecoin. And after that, on top of that, we create various services that will also generate revenue for the protocol and also value for the usual token holders.
Got it. Okay. So we went over the full racing roadmap here. I mean, yeah. So we started with the relationships with early LPs, whether it be, you know, investors, you know, different capital allocators. You're still in the pre-launch phase. And soon you'll have the pre-launch phase will be over. You have your TGE. You have the airdrop. The token will be distributed to the community. And then from there, you keep growing the protocol. And then the ultimate goal is to have this. Let me go back. You also have, of course, the DeFi protocol partnerships and integrations with Pendle, Morpho, Curve. Got to get it out into the ecosystem. Nothing exists in a vacuum. I had a question, though, about the centralized exchange partnership. You said, like, use usual US zero as collateral, USD zero as collateral. Like, what did you mean by that? Like, on the centralized exchange?
I mean that a lot of stablecoin have idle cash that are not productive. Sometimes they lend this cash, you know. I think in the long run, this will not be possible because with the regulation, you know, you cannot lend the liquidity of your client easily. And this is a good thing because if a third party is bankrupt, at the end, this can create damage for the user of a centralized exchange. So the problem with that model where a lot of liquidity are in USDT and USDC is that they are not productive. What we offer the possibility for everyone that is using USD0 to own a part of the governance of the protocol. And so to own a part like if it was their own stablecoin issuer. And so really what we are discussing with exchange currently is to be integrated with them, to be used as a trading pair, also a collateral, because we bring them some value, because we give them a way to own a part of a new stablecoin issuer that can be their stablecoin issuer on the long run. And so this is really something that can improve the relationship between stablecoin issuer and centralized exchange. You know, you have Coinbase that is close to Circle, you have Bitfinex that is close to Tether, you had BUSD that was issued by Paxos, that was the stablecoin of Binance. As the regulation come and there is a lot of change in the market, clearly it's very difficult for centralized exchange to have their own stablecoin. And so having a model where the governance, the ownership is distributed, if you use the stablecoin, is also a way for them to enter in a new phase where they don't need to have their own stablecoin, but they can take a part of the governance of the stablecoin. And so CeFi distribution is very key. A lot of crypto users are entering in crypto also with exchanges. And so that's very important to be listed and to be used as, an eligible and a capital efficient stablecoin as a collateral on the platform. And so to use as a perp, as a collateral for perps, to be used also as a counterparty in trading pairs and so on. So this is currently our discussion with the main exchange, as we really think that we can bring a lot of value to the CeFi ecosystem also.
Yeah, it's funny. You don't really see too many, like you said, every exchange has their own stable coin. So it's like Coinbase, USDC, yeah. Tether, Bitfinex, and so on. But we don't really see other exchanges with their own stablecoin. You don't really see DeFi-centric stablecoins make their way to centralized exchanges. And a big reason for that is because the interests aren't aligned. But with usual and how your distribution strategy for your governance token is, it does align the interest. And so maybe we'll see it on Kraken. Maybe we'll see it somewhere else. Who knows? You guys could be one of the first ones to crack at that.
We hope so. So, yeah, it's really... I think it's the next challenge for CeFi to have also a bridge between DeFi and CeFi, to have more cooperation with DeFi protocol and CeFi actors. Mm-hmm. Because at the end, I don't know that what will be, the global financial landscape, but what I'm sure is that there will be CeFi and DeFi actors. And so we need more cooperation, not just only listing, we need more cooperation and more partnership between those type of entities.
Got it. Yeah. And I'd love to quickly jump in here and let's go back to the DeFi world a bit and dive into the mechanics that we talked about earlier with USD 0++ and also the base interest guarantee. Like, could you kind of walk us through how that whole system works and why it's pretty much kind of, was a big push for your TVL and having the TVL stay there sustainably?
Yes. So, the difficulty of a model where you distribute governance token, and really I'm speaking about game theory and distribution mechanism, is that when you distribute a token, at the end, it needs to be linked to something that is tangible and this is real value. And that was my point when I was a little bit criticized, governance token that have no real link with a value generated at the end. And so usual is a model of distribution that need to be subtenable. What we don't want is to distribute governance token, that will be diluted over the long run and goes to zero. And that's just to bootstrap the TVL. We have seen a lot of mechanisms like that in 2021 in DeFi. And I really think we need to innovate on that field because it's a real problem. Stacking that are dilution and at the end, this go to zero. This is really a problem. So we invent a mechanism that is based on three objects. The first, that is a stable coin. So USDT, USDC is non-productive. USD zero is non-productive also. It's a means of payment. You can use that in some liquidity pools. You can swap any asset against USD zero and so on. So on the long run, this will be distributed like USDT, USDC. If you want to earn a yield, you need to stack it. you need to lock it in the USD 0++. We call it enhanced bond, enhanced T-bill. In fact, it's just a version of the stablecoin that is safe, but locked during a certain amount of time, and that ensures that the protocol will have future cash flow. So in a certain sense, we are distributing usual token against a revenue of the protocol. We are distributing usual token only in the case if you are making future cash flow with the protocol. So this is tied to real value. We don't want to have an inflation of the governance token that is not linked to an inflation of the revenue of the protocol in certain sense. Because if we are issuing some governance token that is not linked to any revenue of the protocol, at the end, this dilutes the value generated by the whole mass of the governance token holder. So you need to lock your stablecoin in USD 0++, and you have two ways to claim a yield. The first way is a yield in denominated in usual, and so it's a speculative yield, clearly, because the yield will be denominated in something that is volatile. So the usual token price will be the price on the secondary market. And if there is some expectation on the growth of the protocol, normally the model has been designed for having a yield that is better than the risk-free yield. And this is important because we create an asymmetric bet. If everyone thinks that the protocol in terms of TVL and so in terms of revenue will grow, they are incentivized to bring new liquidity, USDT and USDC, and they can earn a better yield without any more risk in certain sense than just the underlying risk of the stablecoin that is the real world asset. So it's like an asymmetric bet where people will make more money through the fact that they expect that the future cash flow of the protocol will be higher. And this mechanism will lead to a flywheel that is, I think, the most important thing if you want to fight against the network effect of Tether and Circle. So really the value on the long term of usual token is, as it is totally linked to the revenue of the protocol, is not dilutive. You will not fear to have something that will go down if it's not overpriced. Because, I don't know, you know, founders will dump you after 1 year. VC will also have their vesting, and so it will create dilution. All the mechanism is built around something that is fully transparent, where 90% of the usual token are going for the community. 10% only are going for insiders, team, founders, advisors, investors. And the reason it's important, the issuance of the usual token is only made when there is new cash flow in the protocol. So you are sure that you will not be diluted by new entrants or people that have inside on you. That's a really important point, because if you have distrust, you can have buyers. And really the problem with governance tokens that are issued in a lot of DeFi protocol, if you have a lot of short-term holders, people that are selling directly for realizing their yield, so they farm and they just sell it. But you don't have a lot of long-term buyers because they expect that at the end, as the tokenomics are made, there is a huge risk of dilution with various peoples. And so clearly, this was an objective of usual to be sure that in the distribution, one, this distribution is fully transparent, and the second point is that if the TVL is grow and the protocol is growing, that means that there is new usual data issue and less also. And so normally the price of the usual should follow the trend of the disinflationary issuance of usual, because usual is linked also to an issuance that is like the Bitcoin issuance, where you have less and less usual that are printed over the time according to the growth of the TVL. And so normally that should raise the price of the usual, because you have a mechanism of scarcity that will align also early believers with long-term holders.
Got it. And how does the base interest rate guarantee play into this? Instead of opting for the volatile usual yield, yes, I could choose to go with the interest rate guarantee?
Yeah, so you're right. You have two ways. The first is it's a speculative yield in usual, and you have also protection, let's say a downside, if the speculation and let's say there is no interest on the usual market at the moment, And so the yield is below the risk-free rate. What we are doing is that the company is destroying the revenue. The protocol is destroying the revenue, and they distribute that to the staked one. So it becomes a rebase stablecoin in certain sense, like yield-bearing stablecoin. We are not distributing, we are not keeping the revenue. The revenue are not put together in the treasury of the protocol, but we give you an insurance to have at least the risk-free rate. So that means you have an asset, your stablecoin. If you lock it, your position is liquid, so you can sell your staked version that is USD 0++ on the secondary market. And this rapid token give you access to yield that can be higher than the risk-free yield in usual, or at least you can have the guarantee to have the risk-free rate that is the rate of the underlying. And for that, the protocol is not making earnings. It gives just directly the earnings to the user.
Got it. And then there's this little game theory here in which if I were to withdraw, like what happens in that thing if I decide to, you know, withdraw from the usual side or withdraw my whole principal?
So if you want to withdraw your USD zero from USD 0++, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what we are making, so we have made, let's say, a stacking that is a locked form of the stablecoin during 4 years. 4 years at start because it's linked to the model of distribution. So we distribute, usual token only, we mint usual token and distribute them only if there is a future cash flow that is tied to the TVL. And so it was important to have a period for the common good where the protocol is sure to have some future cash flow. If not, you know, you can abuse of the system where you have a cash flow one day, but every people sell the usual and redeem another day. And so the usual goes down to zero. And so you can exploit that at the beginning. We will make shorter maturity. And also we will, at the TG, allow people to redeem one their USD 0++ against USD 0 to be sure that there is a strict parity between those two assets and ensure that there is liquidity. So on the primary market, we will offer an exit on USD 0++ in USD 0. And that's very important, I think, for the confidence of the model. On the long run, we will have a price stability module that will be a way for every USD 0++ to have a period of onboarding where they can onboard their USD 0++ in USD 0 according a certain amount of time. And in this time, there will be maybe buyers that will rebuy your position if you want to exit the system. So this price stability module will be made at the beginning of Q1 2025, just after the TG. And in between, we will allow the redemption of 1-1 USD 0++ in USD 0. But what we want to educate behind this mechanism is that really the way for us to conceptualize the locking of the stablecoin is something that is mandatory if you want to distribute governance token. Because if not, you can have bad loop that goes to destroy value in general because you can create dilution. If I'm not sure that there is future cash flow in the protocol and this means that I can issue some usual token without diluting, you know, the people that have the usual token before, really the long term plan is very important, and so we need to have a prevision in terms of earning for the protocol.
Got it. But I read somewhere that if I were to withdraw USD 0++, I actually forfeit my usual. Or if I claim my usual before the period is over, I forfeit my usual. I read that somewhere in the docs.
No, you will be able, I think for big holders, you will be able to exit 1-1 giving a part of the usual. It's something, a mechanism that we are looking for. But for the moment, if you exit 1-1 your USD 0++ against USD 0 and you can go in USDC after, you will have no consequence at the beginning at the TG. But as we will implement a price stability module plus also various maturity for the bonds, this will also lead to a mechanism where, yeah, if you want to unbond, you need also to give back a part of the usual that you earn, especially because you are sacrificing the future cash flow of the protocol. That means that we need to have a compensation for that. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So let me quickly summarize here, because that was a lot of information. All right. So right now in this phase, since we're getting Usual started and getting it out there, there aren't many consequences per se. Things are still be able to be swapped one-to-one and no bonding redemption curves. And how it works is once you turn your USD 0 into USD 0++, which is called stacking, you could opt for either a base interest guarantee rate, which is the risk-free rate, or you can offer this higher, more variable, or I mean, they're both variable, but a more volatile rate with the usual side.
Absolutely.
Now, when you opt for the usual yields, the yield that's supposed to go to you from the treasury bonds and such is going to go into the protocol's treasury. And then the protocol's treasury is going to grow over time. But hey, you receive usual for it, and that usual controls the treasury. So in effect, you still have, you know, action on that yield. It's not that it's completely forgone. Now, let's say bad things happen and the usual token is not performing or whatnot. You could always opt for the base interest guarantee, which is receiving all of that native actual yield bearing assets, such as the T-bills, directly to you, paid to you in zero USD zero. Okay. That is where we're currently at.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, perfect. Then in the future, we have a ton of cool shit with the whole bonding curve, and then people are going to be able to price the dollar time value of USD zero.
Yes.
Some people may be able to ARB in there and get some free money. So yes, all the money games are going to come much later.
This is the decentralized banking that comes in later.
I think it's very, and then last highlight point, and my throat is killing me, so this is going to be my literally last point. I love the fact that the token emissions is tied to the revenue of the protocol and is effectively, quote unquote, almost backing it for one-to-one, almost creating this floor-esque equivalent.
There is a floor.
That's what we're thinking about.
The floor will be the revenue generated. Yes, it will be the floor. The floor will be the revenue generated. And after that, you know how it is working in crypto. The speculation is higher than everywhere else. And so people will also price usual according what they expect in terms of growth. And this layer of speculation will create what is the most important thing in the protocol, because this really creates a flywheel. Because you can have a model where, especially at the beginning, the yield of the usual token, through the fact that people will bet on the growth of the revenue of the protocol, will be higher than the risk-free yield. So it's something where you take no more risk than having, you know, a real world asset behind, but having a better yield.
Yeah, I'm 100%. And just one last thing. You mentioned 90% goes to
emissions. Yeah, I was about to say that. 90%.
Yeah, and then 10% goes to the team, advisor, investor, and et cetera. Yes. Like, then if every usual token is emitted only based on the revenue, then how does that 10% ever come out?
Yes, like, it's linked to that. So,
there isn't like a 10% printed somewhere. Wow. So you're going to have to wait to earn your keep. It's wow.
Yeah.
Okay, it's get normal. Rich slowly.
I think it's a big risk. It's a big risk. I think there is a huge opportunity for investors, but at the end, it's fair. You know, that means that if we don't succeed, you will have a size of your 10% that will be linked to the success. If there is no success, there is no way to dump usual token on retails. And really, I think it's important. If there is a huge success, you will have 10% of the company, so that's good. But at the end, really, I think we need to leave this type of mechanism where insiders are 30-40% of the supply. That doesn't mean anything, you know. Crypto have been invented for users and for sharing the value. So token is not just a way to bootstrap, it's something to distribute the value over the long term. This is the first principle we are very attached with usual. And the second thing is that yeah, there is no way to be profitable as a founder or an investor if the company is not working well. Because after that, yeah. it's just a mechanism of pop and dump when you dump on users. And really, I don't want to have that in the protocol. So yeah, clearly 90% for the community. When I say community, is all the people that would bring value. So liquidity providers, you know, people that stack the usual,
sure.
People that stack the stable coin, people of the ecosystem also. So integration, but clearly all this distribution will be fully transparent. This is really the toughest part of usual, to make something that is transparent, reverifiable in terms of distribution. I think it's something that's yeah. very complex for our tech team. And at the end, yeah, 90% of all the issuance are going for the community and 10% are going for investors. And if there is no real cash flow, there is a limitation of the issuance. That is also a way for us to protect you know, usual holders in the long run.
Love it.
Got it. I wanted to ask about, I want to shift gears a bit to ask about like regulation and MiCA, because I know the EU yes. came out with that, and I'm not sure if it's live yet or not. And like, I'm curious, especially as a former politician and legislator, like, what are your thoughts on MiCA? How is like usual compliant with that? Do you think it'll just yeah. keep getting delayed? Like, yeah, I'll let you take it.
So when I left the National Assembly, the European Parliament was in charge with the European Commission to draft MiCA and vote MiCA. So MiCA is a framework that is focusing on virtual asset providers. So let's say centralized exchange brokers, market makers, and also on an asset that is stablecoin. So the two components of MiCA are very much, you know, having a license for all centralized actors and having a license if you want to issue stablecoin. You have different ways to conceptualize stablecoin in MiCA, two type. EMT, ART. So EMT is like electronic money, and ART are the basket of various crypto that are backing a stablecoin. And so you need to be compliant to this rule since June 2025. So since 3 months, 2024. Sorry, so since 3 months. The idea for usual is to be an EMT token. But as we are decentralized, and this is also the idea of usual to be fully decentralized on the long run. So we start to be a little bit centralized at the beginning, and after that, decentralize the protocol step by step. But we cannot create day one, you know, a maker live, a maker like, or something like that is totally governed by the token holder, especially when the TG is not yet done. So clearly, we will converge with something that is decentralized. But as we are not backed by bank deposit, it's not possible to fit with the rules of MiCA. And so we have an exemption that is because of our, because we are decentralized, that allow us to issue the stablecoin in a compliant way. And I think we will be regulated with the new law that will be voted, I think, in the next 2 years, that will be MiCA 2. So for decentralized protocol, yeah, yeah, MiCA 2, yeah. There is always a new law.
The sequel. But,
yes, but this is normal, you know, in certain sense, because clearly, for the moment, MiCA is very focused on actors that are centralized, that are relying also on banking infrastructure and so on. You know, we have a smart contract that is audited, and we have in this smart contract the T-bills token that are backing the stablecoin. We don't have any cash on any fiat bank account. We 100% is fully on chain. So it's really difficult to fit what have been implemented in MiCA, and it's why we will be regulated only if there is a new form of regulation for DeFi protocol. But this was the aim of the regulator. You know, they want to regulate first centralized actors, and after that DeFi actors. What I think about Mika, I think there is good things and maybe bad things. Good things is that, you know, we have the same regulation for every state member in the European zone. So that's very important. In Germany, you know, in Austria, in Sweden, we have the same type of rules, and also it gives us some clarity. After that, I think the worst part of Mika is maybe about stablecoin itself, because clearly this time been invented to have less stablecoin in this market, because it's like a competitor of traditional bank. Really, it's like that. We have a great lobby of traditional bank in Europe that don't want to have challenger with new innovation and so on. So it's not just about, you know, AML stuff, or terrorism and so on. This is sometimes an excuse to create some rules that just protect insiders against outsiders that try to innovate. And really, I think it's a worst point of Mika where we need to have more pragmatism in Europe and not just create regulation to protect, private interest or common interest, but without knowing what should be the subject in terms of sovereignty, in terms of also protecting investors and so on. Really, it's also the same, you know, in US when SEC goes against a lot of real use case in crypto. Just the case with Uniswap, you know, Uniswap is the best use case in crypto. I think the UX are incredible. They are making revenue, the protocol is making revenue and so on. And you have a lot of shitty projects that are not making revenue and they try to dump on retails. And at the end, because the normal projects that are the most credible and serious projects are attacked by SEC, what we see is that people are gambling on Memcoin and exchange list Memcoin. So at the end, you know, you are not, you just push your customers, you push your users in the end of certain sense, not bad actors, but people that are not producing any value for the community. So really, I'm a little bit skeptical on how regulators play the game, certain sense. I really think that we need to raise our level. I have seen so many things in crypto that are not okay with insiders deals, with a loss of trading against the project or trading against consumers and so on. I think this is less and less the case, but really we need to have regulation, but a good regulation. That's not something that is just for protecting, you know, the traditional system. And sometimes it's a little bit like that, you know. So I don't see bad everywhere. I think there is a lot of theses that are not right in certain sense. If you deep dive sometimes just people don't want to work on this complex subject, and so they don't have a real idea on how blockchain, how crypto is working. So they just prefer, you know, to keep their simple term on crypto. But on the long run, what I see is that, yeah, there is an easier way to conceptualize crypto that is just trying to translate what is the actual regulation to the new regulation, and the actual system, what is the TradFi system, is not working like the DeFi system is working. And so you need to reinvent, you need to deep dive, to reinvent the rules. And this is something that needs to be done by the regulator and also by politician, you know, by a policymaker. That's very important, I think, if in the long run we want to have something that is, yeah, that is more adapt to what we want to build.
Exactly, and I couldn't agree more. If only we had more policymakers and regulators that were like you, that like would just go head first into this industry. Maybe they don't want to make a stable coin, but I think we'd be better off. But yeah, on that note, I think we're ready to wrap up. At the end of every interview, we like to ask one question to our guest. And that one question is, who do you want to see on Flywheel next? Who would you recommend to come on the show?
Whoa, tough question. Tough question. I need to think about that. Yeah, in general, DeFi protocol.
Anyone you want.
You need to interview a regulator, I think. You need to interview a regulator. Because I think it's important.
Gary Gensler.
Yeah, maybe. Or policymaker. If you want some names, I can introduce. Clearly, yeah, I think it's important, you know, for crypto users to understand also what is behind and how this ecosystem that are. The regulation and the regulator work. So it's, yeah, I think it's good to have to them on the show.
Yeah,
cool. Thank you.
Good suggestion. And where can people find you? Where can people, you know, go explore usual protocol on socials and whatnot?
On Twitter, yeah. Usual Money, also usual.money. They can see our documentation on our Gitbook, and but they can play with the app. They just need to have a code during this pre-launch phase, but if they type on Google or on Twitter, they would find a code everywhere. So it's free access in certain fields.
Oh, you heard the man. Go find that code. Go to Usual Money. Go get some pills.
Yes.
Pierre,
take your pills.
Pierre, thank you so much for coming on. We hope to see you again soon.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. What a pleasure.
All right. It's the post game. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capo K, wrapping up an episode with Pierre Parson, the founder of Usual Money. And what a nice guy. Like, his head is in the right place. You can see that, like, embodiment and sense of service that he had working in the government, but in the same way that he's like building this stablecoin. I think that was like pretty apparent, especially in the way that he thought of like the tokenomics. And like, I thought, but he's like, the token only gets emitted when there's revenue. That's huge. And that's for everyone.
Massive. That's, I've never seen that. And not only that,
it makes so much sense.
Like, split.
Like, there's so many times during this interview where things just like made sense. I'm just like, why haven't we done that before? It makes so much sense for there to be mission based on revenue. That's just like straight inflation. Greedy. Because this, like, there's, think about how many DeFi tokens just dumped to zero because it's just inflation. And on top of that, like, I didn't even say this on the show, but like 90% to the community, that's massive. That's huge. That is like, that is the right way to do it. Because you have so many times there's like a overhang of like 20, 30, 40, 50% of like tokens from like that just, you know, they're already pre-selected like groups of people. And like, yeah, we all need a bootstrap, but 90%, that is like as close as you can get to a fair launch.
Agreed.
Yeah. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this one? What do you think of Usual?
I think it's definitely unusual because it stands out definitely from the rest of the pack. I love the vision of becoming a decentralized banking layer, and what, you know, everyone says that, right, is very altruistic.
You get a decentralized banking layer. You get one too.
But the fact that his tokenomics kind of lends itself to that, like, okay, now this guy's really putting his money where his mouth is. So I really appreciate how principled he is. And also the design of Usual is like not that radically crazy per se, but the way that the value accrual is happening, meaning token emissions are just emitted randomly, it's tied to something, which I think the future cash flows, which I think is like phenomenal as a design. I feel like there maybe need to be some initial liquidity just so there's something out there in the first place, but overall I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah, we've been having more stable coins on recently. You know who we need to have on soon? We need to have on Drake. You need to get back on Drake from Agora.
Yeah, for sure.
So that will be coming soon. I'll talk to him. But anyways, this was Usual Money. If you want to see more episodes like this and then some, make sure you go ahead, hit that bell button, subscribe on YouTube. Go to the comments, let us know what you think, give us a like. Follow us on all of our socials, at Flywheel DeFi on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram, at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter, at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not in investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.